The R.R. Campbell Writes Cast is brought to you in part by listeners like you. Learn more about the great rewards available to Writes Cast contributors by visiting patreon.com/writescast. Thanks for listening. Hey, hi, hello, and welcome to episode 6 of the R.R. Campbell Writes Cast. Before we hop into this episode's interview, a quick update on the podcast going forward. Starting in June, we're going to be moving to a more aggressive release schedule, which means podcasts coming out on the first and third Friday of each month. And though the podcast is growing and growing well, there are still some spots available for 2017. If you're a writer, an agent, or an editor interested in being on the show, I'd love to hear from you. As always, you can contact me on Twitter at @IamRRCampbell or by email at rrcampbellwrites@gmail.com. Turning our attention to today's episode on developing a personal brand as an author, for this one, we're joined by Cheryl J. Meir, who is a certified life coach with 5 years professional experience in PR and 2 years running an online marketing business. Not only that, but Cheryl is the author of Angel of the Night, The Monster Within, which debuted on Amazon in the top 100 for its category upon its release in November of 2016. Aside from that impressive resume, Cheryl also happens to be the first international guest on the Writes Cast, having joined me from England back in March for what I found to be a fantastic conversation. All that being said, I'll step aside for now so we can get right into the audio for the interview, but stay tuned after it's wrapped up for info on the next Writes Cast episode. Without further ado, here's my full conversation with author and certified life coach, Cheryl J. Meir. Thank you, Cheryl, for joining me today.
Oh, happy to be here. Thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start right away with, why is it important for an author to develop a personal brand?
Absolutely. And that is a really, really good question. It is really important to build a personal brand. Before we go into the benefits, though, I want to backtrack a little bit even further and explain what we mean by a personal brand.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we think of brands as, you know, Starbucks or Apple and those really big consumer brands. But people might not know that, you know, people like Beyonce and Lady Gaga are also brands. So people can be brands too. Albeit those two examples are celebrity brands, but nevertheless personal brands. Now, I'm actually from a PR background, public relations. I used to work in corporate PR for many years, and I was really surprised to learn that personal branding isn't really talked about in the writing community at all. And I don't know if you've found this, but we tend to talk about marketing 101 instead, and most new authors follow it. So, you know, when we say marketing 101, we're talking about the 99 cent ebooks and the kind of anonymous promotion under a pen name that bears no resemblance to your actual real name. And it does have its merits. You know, you can tickle Amazon's algorithms and you can sell some books. At the same time, though, it is becoming quite old and quite tired and everyone starts to sound the same.
Yeah, there's a lot of saturation in that. I notice even when I hop on Twitter, there's a couple of those like indie author retweet groups that I follow. And at first I was like, oh, this is neat. There's a lot of really cool content out there. But after a while, it does kind of fade into the background. There's a different sort of, it doesn't necessarily stand out like it did when I first hopped onto Twitter as a writer.
Exactly. And I'm going to be a bit of a kind of a prediction machine here. And I do predict that's going to change. And the reason personal branding is so important is that very reason that you specified. You know, everyone starts to sound the same. So creating a personal brand makes you stand out as an author. There are other benefits too. It helps you to reach more people through mainstream media. So things like radio and local newspapers, which do still exist.
Turns out, yep.
Yeah, I know. They're still out there. So but that can really help with, you know, with reaching more people. Same thing with guest blogging in major online media, and that's going to vary completely depending on your genre, whether you're nonfiction or, you know, writing crime thrillers or whatever the case may be. But that major online media really can't happen unless you have your face and your name to your brand. And another thing it does is it builds your know, like, and trust factor. So what that means in non-PR speak is it means people know you, like you, and or hopefully and trust you. And people will actually buy your books because of this. Now, obviously, this is going to be really, really important if you're a new author trying to establish yourself and build a reputation and a readership from scratch. If people don't know you, they're not really able to buy your books.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. It also sounds like, I mean, between the know, like, and trust factors, it seems like it's really a, maybe hierarchy is not the right word, but it seems like you have to build through those as a greater process. None of it's going to happen right away, and you certainly have to be known before you can be trusted, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't really have one without the other. And if we kind of think about it as ourselves, like why should we part with our hard-earned cash for someone we don't know, like, and or trust? Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of need to have all those three elements to invest in a brand, whether that is, you know, Starbucks or Amazon or whomever, or if it's a new author, it all works the same way.
Yeah. So as we're looking at sort of building that brand, getting out there and making yourself different, I guess let's kind of take a maybe we'll take a question that kind of branches off of that. What are some mm-hmm. ways that you believe currently are either effective for establishing a brand, or what direction do you see this going in the future as writers that are looking to establish a brand for themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. So to give you something really concrete, because I know I'm very much talking in PR speak and very much in very high level kind of woo-woo terms.
No, that's fine.
I released my first book in November. Mm-hmm. And as a new author, I thought, look, let's take my PR background and use all of that. And I used the personal branding model. So my first book, Angel of the Night, charted in Amazon's top 100 in its category.
Well, there you go. Congrats.
No publisher. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. It was no publisher, no promotional budget. And what I also did is I tapped into a brand new market. So it was people who don't normally read fiction, let alone erotica, which is the genre mainly. Mm-hmm. But they bought the book because they knew me and they followed me online and knew my brand. And it's now read in the States, throughout Canada, England, and Australia. So this personal branding stuff really, really works. So for authors who are releasing their first book, it's really time to start putting your name and your face to your work. I know it's scary. I know that sometimes if you're writing very violent or very explicit material, sometimes you want to hide, you know, with a pen name. But yep. There's a lot of merit to coming out the closet, so as it were, and putting your face and your name to your writing.
Yeah, so it sounds like you were in a position where you were able to take advantage of what was already a very strong online and interpersonal presence to sort of take that brand that you already had as an individual in the PR world and sort of make a transition into the world of writing. For folks that might not be, I guess, in the same position in the world of PR, people like me who, you know, I work in export, you know, I'm not in a marketing background per se. What would you suggest for someone who's just looking to get their feet wet? Are there certain digital platforms you'd recommend people work with? Do you find that interpersonal models work best? I mean, I'm sure it's a little column A, a little column B, but what would be your thoughts on someone who's just trying to get started with all of this?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, just kind of an offshoot to that is with the personal relationship side, you know, the goal is when you have online relationships with people who are in your area, like definitely reach out, you know, have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee with them and build that relationship. So it's kind of in real life a little bit more rather than just within the four walls of the internet. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of an aside. But in terms of the digital platforms, all social media platforms have merit. And if you're doing it right, you're going to find your audience and your readership on any platform. That being said, though, Twitter is the most important for authors, hands down. Mm-hmm. I think you'd agree on that. Is that a fair
yeah,
comment?
Yeah, I absolutely would. And that's Twitter's an interesting sort of game because it is so saturated. I think that one of the challenges that I feel like I've had is I did try to go into, you know, the world of Twitter with a general plan. You know, this podcast, I suppose you could say, is part of establishing a brand, working on the weekly writing tips blog posts is part of that. But at the same time, it's so saturated. It can be a bit of a racket sometimes. So though Twitter's fantastic, I think, you know, I'm sure having a diverse digital platform is also a really big part of making sure you can reach people who might not be on Twitter, who aren't just writers, also looking to accomplish the same things that you are.
Absolutely, yeah, 100%. So it's important to have a presence across the board. You know, if somebody has 20,000 followers on Twitter and then they maybe have, you know, 100 on Instagram, it looks a little bit out of whack. So definitely creating a fairly consistent following across all platforms is important. I mean, as to the hows and the whys, that gets really, really tactical. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we have the capacity to go into it too much more here. But what I will say is the importance of Twitter isn't necessarily because of branding, although branding does have an impact. So as you mentioned, you kind of alluded to, there are a lot of influencers on Twitter. So you're going to meet your book agents, you're going to meet book bloggers, media personalities, fellow authors, and, you know, they all have a Twitter and they're all really, really friendly, I find. Mm-hmm. On the flip side of that, though, thinking about other channels, not everyone is going to add you as their Facebook friend, but they will talk to you on Twitter and interact with you. And then when you have a strong personal brand and a strong presence on Twitter, it makes meeting those kinds of people, so, you know, your fellow authors, your media personalities, that much easier. And at the same time, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation if it wasn't for Twitter, because we encountered one another there. So it's a really, really powerful channel.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it really is. So it sounds like you would recommend, I mean, first Twitter, which I would definitely second. I mean, I'm not the expert, but I've found that Twitter's been a really great way to meet these friendly people, including yourself and the others that I've, you know, spoken with via the podcast or just looking for beta readers or getting involved in pitch contests and things like that. So Twitter's been effective for that. It sounds like you mentioned Instagram. I know Facebook came up a little bit. Are there other platforms specifically for writers that you think would be good for someone to sort of check out?
Yeah, I mean, I love Facebook just because I'm a fan of the live stream, but I know a lot of channels now are kind of blurring their pros and cons. Like, a lot of them are owned by the same people. Facebook and Instagram, of course, are owned by the same people. Instagram's owned by Facebook, so that now has a live video option. So the lines are starting to blur between each platform anyway, and I think that'll probably continue. Mm-hmm. I'd say if I had to choose a second one after Twitter, as much as I think Facebook is really fun, I'd say Instagram is the most important one after Twitter. There's a huge readership of our huge community of readers, and you know that the bookish hashtag is really hot on Instagram, and there's just a lot of people that really love reading and really love books, and I'd say that's probably the second most important one after Twitter.
And I suppose too, then, I mean, you're going to be promoting or I guess featuring different sorts of posts when you're looking at comparing Twitter to Instagram, for example, because on Twitter at least, and I'm no Instagram pro, I in fact don't even have an account. It's something that I just haven't, you know, dove into it quite yet. But with Twitter,
I mean, honestly, there's a lot. There's so many channels. It's like, which one do you pick?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that becomes the other challenge is, in a world where as an author or as a writer who's just getting started, I mean, in many cases, you are in a position where you're trying to just make the time to write during the course of the day. And then when you have to get into things like brand management or marketing and all of that, it really does become, I think you have to treat it as either a second job or just it becomes sort of ideally your full-time job. So it's really becomes a balancing act. You know, how many platforms can an individual support and also be supporting their writing at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm certainly from the school of kind of, I'm an author entrepreneur. So I always say that in my heart, I'm an author, but my brain is an entrepreneur. So I very much look at it as that way. I don't have my day job anymore. I've been out of my day job for about a year now. Yeah. But, you know, I remember when I was in my day job, it was really tough, you know, trying to build this business around writing and write my book and get my manuscript together, figuring out the whole self-publishing landscape and doing social media. Mm-hmm. It was a lot. So that's why I'd recommend people hone down and focus on Twitter to start with, and the rest will follow. You know, you don't have to do everything at once.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I think that is some really, I would say, sage advice, honestly, because it's easy to get overwhelmed if you're trying to dip your toes in any platform for the first time. But if you're trying to do it with multiple ones at the same time, I know years ago when I tried to do the Twitter game for the first time, I also tried to hop on Tumblr, and between trying to manage both of them, it was too much, man, as they say. So I had to step back, and I actually think the trying to jump into both at the same time was discouraging enough that I just retreated, you know, quote unquote retreated back to the world of just focusing on my writing, which, though very important, was not, you're not necessarily building a brand if you're just hanging out in the glow of your laptop and typing away all day. You know, there is at some point, if you're an individual looking to self-publish or if you're looking to go the agented route, I mean, you have to be weighing these steps in advance, I guess. So,
Definitely. And what I would say is, you know, you can combine the two, and I certainly find it comes in waves. There'll be times when I'm very, very visible online, and there's other times when I, you know, as you said, kind of retreat. Mm-hmm. When I have retreated, though, I'll make sure I'm scheduling some of my content in, you know, a social media scheduler like Hootsuite. There's a ton out there, but I use Hootsuite. So you can, you know, in those moments where you feel inclined to share content, you can then just do a massive kind of blast of content and schedule it for the weeks ahead so that if you are retreating, you're still seen to be visible. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, it absolutely does. And I was going to ask about that too, because you mentioned Hootsuite and you mentioned having a schedule for things. Is that whether you're using Hootsuite or I don't know if you have other platforms you could recommend for listeners who might be interested in getting into that? Because I know that one of the things you see if you hang out on different, you know, blogging blogs, so to speak, is they talk about the importance of having a regular presence. And so I think things like Hootsuite and I think TweetDeck is another one are probably really effective ways to take care of that in advance, right?
Yeah, definitely. And there's, you know what, there's so many out there. I use Hootsuite. I've used it for years. It's based in Vancouver. It was a startup in Vancouver. It's a huge social media juggernaut. And I used to live there, so I kind of have an affiliate with them, an affiliation with Hootsuite in that respect. But they also have a really good free version of their platform. So I think for authors who are, you know, starting out and they're thinking, my goodness, you know, this is going to take up a lot of time and resources and frankly money to publish my first book, especially if I'm going the self-publishing route. So I really don't want to have to pay for all these extra bells and whistles. So it does have a really good free version. And I think the paid version is like $10 a month or something. There's also one called Buffer, B-U-F-F-E-R. I've heard that's really good. I haven't really used it myself, but I've heard that's a good one. But that is also a paid version that I believe is about $10 a month.
Oh, okay, cool. So, I mean, there's a way to, you know, take advantage of these tools at the free level and also a way to get invested at the sort of, you know, at least in the US, it's the cost of a Netflix subscription per month. So, you know, if you're not using your Netflix that much, maybe get rid of that, hop into Hootsuite, hop into Buffer, and then it's all an investment, right? I mean, that's what the branding really is. It's an investment of both time, and you have to be willing to put in an investment up front monetarily sometimes too.
You do. I mean, you do have to invest. I mean, I'd never sort of advocate anyone getting into a precarious financial situation for the sake of it, but, you know, be smart about it and make small investments and level up when you're ready to. You know, you don't have to do it before you're ready or before you're comfortable. If you're finding that the free version of things is working well, then you perhaps don't need to pay for platforms that you don't need. Another thing, and this is a little off topic, but is social media analytics, meaning the metrics, like how many people are reviewing your content and where are they and what ages are they and are they men or are they women? You know, all these things that can really help kind of build a picture of who your readership might be and compare it to who you think your readers might be, because it might surprise you. You know, I assumed people that read Angel of the Night would be women because I've got this really strong female protagonist, but actually it turns out 20% of my readers are men, which I didn't know and I wouldn't have known if it wasn't for these social media analytics. And again, a lot of those are free. They're built into Twitter, they're built into Instagram now too, because Facebook owns Instagram, so they've put a lot of money into building these analytics. So if it's built in for free, you might not necessarily have to pay for it.
Yeah, and that's something that I would point out to listeners as well. You mentioned the Twitter analytics specifically. I believe it's if you hop into your settings, you click on your profile picture in the upper right corner of your homepage. I've actually found those analytics just to be really cool. I mean, it's kind of surface. You don't get a ton of really targeted information necessarily, but what it does do is gives me anyway the opportunity to look at what tweets were more effective in creating engagements, because realistically, and I'm sure you can attest to this given your background, you can tweet content all day long, but if you're tweeting stuff out into the abyss and it doesn't elicit a sort of interaction, there's not a lot of value in that. I mean, that's, you're just accomplishing the no, so to speak, but then you need to be able to break into that like and that trust, and you're never going to do that if your content is getting, you know, 1% engagement on every one of your tweets.
That's a really, really good point. And, you know, I get really granular with it and really quite nerdy, and I try and get into the psychology of it. And I'm like, okay, why did that tweet work so well? Well, you know, I was live tweeting this TV show and it had this hashtag. And that's really interesting because that TV show is based on a book and that book is a similar genre to mine. So how can I leverage that again and just do that again to get more followers and more engagement? So I really try and get inside the heads of the people who are sharing that content and figure out why, so that I can start to replicate that. And obviously, you do it in a really organic, natural way. You never want to be, you know, fake or forced, but you start to notice patterns, and then you can post at those same times and post that same kind of content and ultimately get the same result.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, within what you've just said there, there's some really great wisdom, which is that, you know, it can't just be when you're tweeting, when you're participating in social media in general, you can't just make it be about yourself, but when you do choose to engage with other content, try to, you know, I would suggest anyway, and I'm sure you might too, keeping that content aligned with what it is that you are producing or hoping to market. You know, it's, for as much as I love, for example, I love Game of Thrones, I could live tweet every episode when that comes back on the air, but given that my writing, at least for the novel that I'm querying right now, doesn't fall in that sort of fantasy genre, and I'm not necessarily going to be tweeting about fantasy beyond the bounds of live tweeting Game of Thrones, I might pass on that and instead tweet about, you know, something that's more in the vein of sci-fi, for example, so that the followers that are brought in on that are also more likely to engage with posts related to my actual, you know, queried work right now.
That's absolutely right. And it is a bit of a balance. So on the one hand, you know, live tweeting your favorite TV show, which, you know, I've absolutely done, it can go a little off key if you do it all the time and people think, you know, who is this person and what are they talking about?
Yep.
But on the other hand, if it is linked to the genre that you're writing, it can be really beneficial. But as you said, there's got to be that balance and it has to make sense for the book that you're writing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, it's one thing. I'll follow people all day for Game of Thrones updates, for example. I love digging into those theories, but once in a while you find someone who's really cool and they've got a lot of awesome thoughts on that, but then they'll take a tweet tangent on something else for a couple of days and I find myself saying, well, am I going to continue to follow? Am I going to step away for a second? So yeah, absolutely. You need to have it's part of that coherent vision for yourself and how you want to present yourself in that platform, I guess, as an author or as a writer specifically.
You do, absolutely, yeah.
So then talking about, we spent a lot of time talking about that sort of digital media, and we mentioned, or you mentioned earlier, you know, you want to try to not just be on digital platforms. You want to engage with people personally, whether it's folks in your area that you meet on digital platforms, you go out for tea or you get a sandwich, what have you. What are some other ways that you think would be beneficial for someone to branch out and get away from that world of the just focusing on the digital side of things, like writers' conferences, things like that? Is that something you have experience with?
Yeah, I think that's kind of more on the networking side, but like certainly kind of bringing it back through to branding, it all comes back to having this foundation of the personal brand. So even though, you know, a social media presence is important, what I find is that a social media presence is more the result of good branding rather than the other way around. So thinking about tactics in terms of what you can do to build that personal brand so that when you do go out to those writers' conferences and meet people in person, it all kind of is cohesive and makes sense for you as a person. What branding is really, tactically, is about translating who you are as a person into photographs, fonts, colours, graphics, wording, and all of that. Mm-hmm. So there are lots and lots and lots of different elements of building that personal brand, but the most important one is photography. We're very, very visual creatures, even writers. I know we focus on the written words, but most of us do see in pictures, and a photograph conveys a lot of information almost instantly.
Yep.
There is one caveat, though. You need to make sure your photos actually look like you, because I have been for, you know, coffee dates with people and not being able to spot the person in the coffee shop because they don't look anything like the photograph.
Oh, that always makes it awkward.
I know, it is a little bit, or they've, you know, got like a short black bob in their photograph and they've got long blonde hair in person or vice versa. And you're updated, they need to look like you. They need to basically look like you on a really, really good day, but still you need to be recognizable.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm just going to go into like three tips I would give if someone's going for a personal branding photo shoot. And it sounds really overwhelming, a photo shoot, but it doesn't have to be. And I could talk about this forever. And I actually have a very full comprehensive guide on how to prepare for a personal branding shoot, which is in the Aspiring Authors Toolkit, which is one of my online courses. So if anyone's listening and needs more about this, it's on my website. So please check it out if you feel called to. So my three tips would be for your photo shoot. Number one, choose an outfit and a location that reflects you as a person. So maybe that's a cafe you go to regularly or a coffee shop. I know it can sometimes feel really awkward if you're shooting in public, but if the environment and the images look really, really good.
Yeah.
And with what you're wearing too, with your clothing, you don't want to look too, as we say in England, you don't look too trussed up, you know, you don't look too done up like a Christmas turkey.
Yep.
You want to choose something that feels comfortable to you and something that you actually own and you actually wear.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of one point I would recommend. The second thing would be use props to communicate who you are. So, you know, wear your glasses and pose with your favorite coffee mug. You know, all of these kind of things just give the person that's looking at the images little cues about who you are as a person. And the third and final thing would be make sure you feel comfortable and it feels like you. Again, going back to that analogy of going for a coffee date with someone and you're unrecognizable, you want to look like you, but you on a really, really good day.
Yeah, and to your point of, you know, you don't want to get yourself too trussed up, for example. I mean, if you were to do that and you feel uncomfortable as the shoot's taking place, I feel like that's something that's going to translate into the visual image itself. And if you look maybe not so comfortable or not quite like yourself in those shots, I think that's something that someone who sees that picture could, in a way, pick up on. And that could be discouraging in a way, I'm sure, too.
Definitely, you've got to feel comfortable. Now, I've probably done about 5 or 6 photo shoots now, and I have to say, I felt very awkward and very. It definitely translated in my first kind of round of photographs, but it's been kind of an evolution. And now I did like quite a high glamour shot for the launch in November, which I'm probably going to have new photographs done that are a bit more down to earth. But because I'm someone who, you know, I do kind of dress up most of the time, so that means I can take it kind of a bit more next level in a photo shoot. So, you know, if you're someone that kind of usually wears a sweater, then wear a sweater to your photo shoot, but wear like a really nice sweater. You know, it's not about looking like someone else and wearing something that's really out of character. It's just looking like you, but looking like a really, really good version of you.
It all comes back to you need to be comfortable, because what you're trying to communicate is who you are at your core. So you might take it up one notch, put on that nice sweater, but, you know, don't go full tux or something like that, because then you look like you're just, maybe you're trying too hard or something.
Exactly. And I kind of go back to like my PR days. Like if we'd have someone going in to do a media interview and they're a construction worker, you wouldn't send him in wearing a suit, because that's not his normal, you know, it's not what he normally wears. So he needs to look like who he is as a person and look like yourself, basically.
Yeah, dress for the job, essentially.
Exactly. And writers, you know, we're not superstars, are we? We sit at home and we write, you know, we don't need to go too far with it.
Right? I write in my pajamas every morning. And, you know, if I didn't write at my lunch breaks either, I would be exclusively writing in my pajamas. But that doesn't mean I'm going to get my picture taken in my PJs and blast that around the internet.
Exactly, exactly.
So we had some really good tips in there. I mean, as a sort of, here are some do's. You know, do you have any other like general broad tips that you would suggest for folks who are trying to break into the world of branding before we hop into maybe what some don'ts might be?
Yeah, definitely. So the basic thing, the main thing, is to know who you are as a person. And I know that sounds like, did she really just say that? That sounds really obvious.
Got to go to years of therapy for that first, right? That's the first step.
Yeah, exactly. Do your personal development, like listen to some Tony Robbins or something, like go there. But most of us don't really know who we are and what makes us unique, because it seems normal to us, but we don't realize we have some qualities that might be really, you know, kind of quirky or exceptional or just set us apart that little bit. And, you know, if it'd be helpful, I can certainly go into a few tips about how someone can work that out, if that would be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hop into it.
Amazing. So I've got 3 main tips, and this is part of a free training that's on my site as well, which I go into it a lot more detail there. But one thing I always get people to do is list 5 words that describe you. So if you're stuck and you think, God, how do I even describe myself? How would your, you know, best friend describe you? So maybe you're really adventurous or ambitious, or perhaps you're outspoken or really a really compassionate, loving, caring person. So that's the first one, is list 5 words that describe you. The second thing would be list 5 unique experiences you've had. So it might be things like weird jobs you've had, or interesting life experiences, or places you've lived, places you've traveled to. And then the third and final thing is list 3 fun facts nobody knows about you. So those 3 fun facts might be, you know, are you a huge comic book nerd like me? Do you have a really unique personality type? Are you fluent in lots of different languages? So all of these answers are not necessarily things that you would throw into one photo shoot or one branding session, but it brings to light the things that makes you unique and the things that set you apart as a person. And you can start to build a personal brand around this, because this is you at your core.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm sure it's a matter of taking a look at the 5 things that describe you, those 5 experiences, and then you've got these facts. And I'm sure as you look at the list of it, it's a matter of, oh, I see how a handful of these all relate to one another and how it could work in a more visual format. So I think that's a really great way to find a foundation to, I don't know, represent yourself well in that very visual way.
Yeah, definitely. And you just basically take all of those things and try and translate them, as I mentioned, into, you know, photography and then fonts and colors and words and phrases. And it's just translating you as a person into those visual mediums.
Well, fantastic. I think then, you know, looking at the flip side of the coin, what are some things that maybe you see folks out there doing that you would try to steer them away from? What are maybe some digital platform don'ts where branding is concerned?
I think the biggest thing I see, honestly, is people who are not really doing personal branding at all. I feel like there's no real middle ground. There's the people that are doing it really well or the people that are not doing it at all. So the big don't would be, don't hide behind your pen name. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I say this because I used to do it. You know, mm-hmm. A year ago, if you'd have told me I'd be writing this, you know, erotica book and publish it under my name and put my name to it, I just would have thought, no way, that's crazy, it's terrifying, and it could potentially be disastrous for my brand. Because at the time I was, you know, running an online PR firm effectively, and just to write erotica all of a sudden just seemed very random and very bizarre. Mm-hmm. But I would say don't hide behind your pen name, because like I said before, if people don't really know who you are, you can't really sell books to them. At least it makes it a lot more difficult. And if you do kind of, as I said before, come out of the closet, as it were, and tell people you're writing this book, you can start to share the experience with them and the process, and start to, you know, tweet about milestones like finding a publisher or editing your first draft. And people start to feel really involved in that process. And then when the book's finally out, they're like, oh, here's this book I've been hearing about. And they feel so involved that they want to invest and they want to buy your book. So you can't really do any of that if you're not, you know, showing your name and your face and using the people you already know online. Otherwise, you have to build a completely separate channel. And it's just, it's a lot of work and it's not particularly authentic either.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. I think beyond, you know, and I'm an individual that writes under a pen name, but it is basically my name. I think my name, my actual name is Ryan, which is Ryan Campbell as a name is super common. I've run into it a lot where, yeah, even people at, you know, I've had my dental records mixed up. I've had grades at university mixed up with other folks that have the same name. So for me personally, I made a choice to run with that pen name only because I thought it might actually differentiate me a little bit. And it is tied in, I guess, in a way to who I am as a person. You know, I was tweeting originally as just myself, and then I decided, hey, I'm going to take this Twitter break and come back as me, the author, under a different name. Folks know who I am mostly. But I think otherwise, there is a ton of validity to that, because if you just show up on the internet someday as, you know, Susan Dunham, who's Susan Dunham? No one knows who Susan Dunham is. And you lose a lot of, you just lose the you in a way. And that makes a lot of sense.
You do. And I think that, you know, to your point there, what you've done is you've created a pen name, which becomes your brand, you know, and it's not a made up name. It is your initial, two initials, and then your last name. So, and same with my pen name, it's Cheryl J. Muir. My middle name's Joanne. So it's not that far away from my real name. It's just what I choose for my pen name. And I made a similar decision. There was actually, funnily enough, is Cheryl Muir, who wrote children's books. And I thought, given that I'm writing erotica, it might be a bit confusing for people.
Yeah, I can see how that would be. That could cause some trouble, I suppose.
It could cause some trouble. I often have people, you know, contact me and ask if I wrote, you know, Benny Bear's Tickle Tummy. And I'm like, that's not me. That
not is quite. Not me. And that would be a very strange, that would be a very interesting name for something
like,
in erotica.
Yeah, I don't think that's quite what I'm going for. But, you know, there are situations where you choose your pen name, but it's still a version of your name. And then everything you do is under that name, whether it's R.R. Campbell or Cheryl J. Muir, and then your website's in that name, and you have your photograph attached to it, so Google recognizes that as you.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that the key then there, I think the real lesson to be gleaned from that is that it's important to be deliberate. You know, don't just pick something because, like you've said, you want to hide behind it. Don't just pick something because it sounds cool. Be more deliberate than that, because it's, at, you know, in this world, everything's operating at a higher level than that first step, snap thought of like, oh, I've got a cool idea for a pen name. It's like, well, yeah, that's cool, but a name, one has just a name, an unknown name sold a book, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, you can sell books, but you're really limiting the amount of people you can reach, and you're limiting the amount of things you can do to promote your book as well. You can really only, with a, you know, kind of a fake pen name and an avatar that isn't a person, it's just like a logo or something, it becomes very faceless, and you can't do local media. You can't go into your local radio station like I did and do a radio interview about your book, because you're not a person. You're kind of this weird avatar floating around on the internet. So that's another reason why it's so important to build this personal brand and put your real name and or your pen name and your photograph to your work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even backtracking into your original, you know, overview of some things that it's important to avoid doing, one thing that I think you touched on in there, which I have found very beneficial for me as I've emerged into, you know, the Twitter world and I've taken my blogging more seriously again, is that it's important to start building that brand sort of along the way. You know, you talked about milestones in terms of, you know, where you're at in your work in progress or when you get a publishing deal. You kind of want to tweet along the way rather than just, you know, do this all in the background and then one day hop onto Twitter and be like, hello world, I have a publishing contract. You should follow me now, because that's, people don't really know you then. They're like, oh, well, that's very cool, but you haven't built up this sort of narrative which will allow you to better market that book at a later date.
Absolutely. And I mean, 100%, I couldn't have said it better myself. And you know, as we kind of touched on, when people feel involved in that process too, and they've seen you go from, I have this idea and I'm writing this book, through to an actual physical book they can hold in their hands, they want to be a part of that. And what that translates to ultimately is book sales.
Yeah. And that's just, it's part of the, it really is part of the journey. I mean, having the opportunity to sort of I mean, for me, entering the writing community on Twitter has been an absolute godsend, because you are joining a conversation with other folks who are at various stages in their own sort of adventure in the writing world. And there's a lot of opportunities to build empathy. There have been a lot of opportunities for me to speak with folks I wouldn't have ordinarily spoken with. You, for example, having met on Twitter. And even just today, people volunteering to be beta readers for other people's work. I mean, that's an amazing thing to be a part of. And I think that whether it's from a branding perspective or not, having the opportunity to establish those connections, I think really a big part of what makes all of this worth it.
Absolutely. And I'm sure you'd attest to this. Like, people on Twitter, the writing community, everyone's really, really nice. Everyone wants to help each other. And it feels like a very genuine community where everyone supports one another. And as a new writer, why would you not want to be a part of that?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, we are singing Twitter's praises so greatly right now. I feel like they should be paying us to do this. So, hey, folks at Twitter.
They should be sponsoring your podcast. We
need
to get this
right.
Song out.
That's right. I'll do a 10-second ad every podcast. You tell me what you want to pay me. Let's roll with it. Let's do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Very nice. Do you have any other last thoughts, tips, anything that you can suggest to folks who are just breaking out into this world of branding as a writer? Anything you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, I know we've given people a lot to kind of chew on there. The thing I'd say was take what serves you and leave the rest. You know, this is all really subjective. So if one thing really stands out and you want to run with that, then go for it. If something else is like, you know what, I'm either one, not ready for it, or two, it doesn't resonate with me at all, then throw it out and do it your way. I very much kind of see life in quite a rebellious way anyway, and I do whatever I want to do in terms of my path, in terms of my books, and I don't feel the need to fit into one box. So by all means, find your own path and do it your way. And also the second and final thing would really be, if there is one thing that you want to implement, then go do that and do that now. Don't wait until everything's perfect. Don't wait until you've got your website and your photography and your social media and your this, because it's never ending. Keep implementing the elements as you go along. So when you have your photos done, upload them. When you have your fonts and your colors and your graphics sorted out, upload them. Just do it kind of one piece at a time. Don't feel you have to get everything perfect until you unveil it. So that would be my main and final recommendation.
Well, and I think those are very, very good recommendations. Really great stuff. Thank you a lot for being on the podcast. And I think it sounds like we've got, you know, episodes and episodes worth of material here. So we'll have to have you on again some other time and dive into some of the other aspects of all this.
I would love that. I could talk about this stuff for days. I absolutely love it. Not as much as writing, but this is something I'm really, really passionate about. So thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the opportunity.
There you have it, another episode of the R.R. Campbell Writes Cast in the books. A big thank you again to Cheryl for joining me. If you learned as much as I did, you're already planning the next moves for your brand as an author. If you're looking for even more tips on branding, or you'd like to learn more about Cheryl, you can follow her on Twitter at Cheryl J. Muir, and Muir is spelled M-U-I-R, or you can find her on her website at CherylMuir.com. In keeping with her own advice, she's also on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr, so be sure to find her there, too. The next episode of the R.R. Campbell Writes Cast will feature Marianne Hinkle, contract editor for Dreamspinner Press. That conversation will be released on May 19th and feature information and commentary on the editing and publishing process, proofreading, and what editors and proofreaders look for when poring over your manuscript. That's all for now, but for more podcast updates and writing tips, be sure to find me on Twitter at @IamRRCampbell or on my site, rrcampbellwrites.com. Thanks again for listening, and as always, write on and write well.